Mr. Ashley, reel 9.
Andrew became Jellicoe's new flag fleet.
And then the fleet came known as the Grand Fleet.
Yes.
And from there we went on to Cromarty, or Invergordon as it was then, and then on to Scarpa Flow for the, which was the base of the Grand Fleet for the war period.
Mm. Now, thinking about the period leading up to Jutland, you were mainly at Scapa Flow with the Grand Fleet. What were your main activities during that period?
Well, we were used to go to, on patrol for 14 days, I think it was, in the North Sea. Or at other times, if there were reports of the German fleet having left Germany and coming out to sea. But when we were in port, what I remember, I had to go patrols outside Scarpa Flow on motorboats to try and spot any submarines trying to get into Scarpa Flow. Motor torpedo boats they were. We never saw any, but we were there. And so several of them got in, but... Well, I was there. Fortunately, they didn't sink any ships, but after I left, I know they did sink a couple.
Yeah. While the Grand Fleet was in harbour at Scapa, how did you tend to spend your time in this period before Jutland?
Well, when we were at sea, we were mostly playing housey-housey or cards in the mess. We weren't allowed ashore or anything like that.
Now, how did the men react to that period of inactivity?
Well, that was a time when they got a bit unsettled and wanted to go ashore when we were in Scarpa Flow. And at times, different ships put in requests to the commanding officers that leave should be granted, even for football matches between ships of different ships. And in the end, they granted us leave for 4 hours, I think it was, twice a week when we were in.
Is that all?
Yeah. Just to stretch our legs and say we've been ashore.
Now, had you had to be quite militant in order to get that?
Well, because I was only a boy, so I wasn't the militant type, I mean, but I should imagine the others were militant about it.
I mean, can you remember how they achieved it?
No, again, all coming along and asking everybody to say, do you agree if we'd put in for leave to go ashore and play football? And we were all saying yes, and whoever was running the show went that way.
Was this where the round robins came in?
Well, the round robin came in afterwards, ran in Invergordon, when we weren't allowed ashore there.
I see, yes. So the period at Scapa was one of 4 hours twice a week leave, and all the rest of the time, you'd literally be killing time.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
What was the sort of overall mood of the men during these periods?
Well, the only thing, I mean, they're 100%, 100% behind the Navy, but they're a bit annoyed because they couldn't go ashore and stretch their legs. Mm. It was a question of seeing each other every day, and you could see the land, and you couldn't get over there.
Now, during this period, what was the proportion of time, roughly, in approximate terms, that you spent in harbour as opposed to on patrol?
Well, I should imagine it would be 1 week in three.
You would patrol one week in three?
Mm. No, in harbour 1 week in three. It would be 2 weeks at sea and 1 week in harbour.
Were there any particular incidences that you can remember aboard Iron Duke when you were on patrol duties? Any little
no, only stories? Only the average scares about submarines chasing you and that, but nothing. Not like the when they bombarded Scarborough and.
Yeah, we didn't talk about this. How common were submarine scares at Scapa?
Oh, I used to get one practically every day.
And what form would they usually take? What would happen?
Well, we'd go out on these motorboat patrols and try to catch some of the destroyers, would try and go around and chase them. Well, the ships would stay there all the time, the main fleet. Because they used to say it was almost impossible for a submarine to get into Scarborough. Four top of the Iron Duke with the captain's secretary, Captain Scheer. And my duty was to report to the bridge anything they couldn't see from the bridge, which was much below.
Hang on a minute. I think we ought to start this a bit earlier. Take it from where you leave Scapa Flow and tell me your personal story from that point. This is the Battle of Jutland.
Yeah, well, as you know, we went out to meet this, and as it happened, when the enemy was... When we were on battle stations, my battle station was in the fore top, with the Admiral's share, with the Admiral's secretary, and he had to report everything, you know, he could see, with some other officer, I can't remember him, who he was, I think it was Gordon, so I can't remember anyway. And then we were seeing these shells coming up. We couldn't see the German fleet, this range-finding business. We knew nothing about then until the Battle of Jutland, as you know. These shells were hitting the Invincible and the Indomitable. And I saw the Invincible go down.
What sort of sight was that?
Oh, terrible. I don't want to see any more. She turned over with all these blokes hanging on to her. And then you could see the wakes of the torpedoes from the submarines coming towards each ship, because one hit the Emperor of India behind us. And then, too, I can remember after my four-hour watch up there, I came down and I was told that if I wanted any food, I had to go and get a piece of pickled pork out of a barrel and a biscuit, and that was what we were having during the Battle of Jutland. I don't know if other people have told you the same, but that's what it was in the Iron Duke anyway. Because the cooks weren't doing anything. They were on battle stations. Then after that, went back to the foretop again and for my other four-hour trek. And by then, the German fleet, the fog came on, and we were chasing nothing. But what impressed me was going back to Scarpa Flow. When we got to the scene where the battle started, the fleet either slowed down or stopped, and we had a memorial service for every man that was lost in that battle. And it was the most impressive scene that fixes it in my mind, always will. I don't want to go through that again.
Tell me, when you after the battle had finished and you got back to Scapa and perhaps got a certain amount of information about what had happened during the battle and thought somewhat about your own experiences of the battle, what was the general attitude of men in the lower deck to it? Did they regard it as a victory?
Well, we thought we had a victory. I mean, we were almost sure that we would have had a victory had the fog not come down. But that was our general opinion, and I mean, I read practically every book that's been written about Jutland.
Yes.
And I still can't make my mind up who's correct.
This is the trials of Iron Duke before the war.
Yeah, we were on the way to Bantry Bay, and we were off Campbelldown in Scotland when the hospital ship Maine ran on the rocks, and we had to go and pick up the survivors. This is before the war. Just suddenly thought of that, because that's the only time I've seen a ship on the rocks.
Well, what did you do?
Well, we went and put the boats out and picked up all the survivors we could off the hospital ship Maine.
Now, after you'd gone over to submarines and were serving on D4, you had as your duties patrols in the English Channel.
Yeah.
How long were the patrols and how were they organised?
14 days. We went out with you were in pairs. We went out with D3 and D4. I was in D4, D3 and D4. We'd go out to a certain spot escorted by a trawler, and then the trawler would leave us, say, well, good luck to you, and then we'd have to patrol for 14 days. At the end of 14 days, we'd have to meet a at a certain spot, normally off Brighton Light. Well, on one patrol, when we turned up at the time off Brighton Light, D3 never turned up. We hung about for 12 hours, and then that night the captain said to me, make a signal to say that D3 hasn't shown up. So I made the signal, and they reported to say that D3 had been sunk by a French seaplane.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So we came back, and then the captain and I had to go out on the destroyer and go out to see if we could find any wreckage, but we couldn't find anything at all.
Now, we're at the end of, talking about the end of the war now, by which time you had moved on to H-31. Do you have any memories of the surrender of any of the German ships at the end of the
war? Yeah, but what about the sinking of UB-72? Do you want that?
Oh, sorry, yes, I do. This was on D4 as well.
That's right, yes. So that was an interesting one, that was.
What happened?
Well, we were both coming up to recharge our batteries. We were one side of the moon, and UB-72 was the other side. And there was only the skipper and myself and some other, what, three of us on the bridge. And all of a sudden, I said to the skipper, I said, what's that over there? And he said, oh, it's a U-boat doing the same as we are to recharge their batteries. He signaled down action stations. We fired a torpedo and missed. And with that, I immediately took off my sea boots. I remember this quite. He said, what are you doing that for? I said, well, if we miss, she's not going to miss us. Actually, she did miss us. And then we fired the next one and hit her. And that was in Lyme Bay on May the 18th, I think it was. Like, I know the date, got the date anyway.
Yes.
And she sank, and the captain got the DSO and the...
Did you take off any of the German?
No.
It went down with all hands. Did you make any effort to find
them? No, he didn't. He wouldn't ask if he's an Irishman. He wouldn't. He said, I said to him, what about the survivors? He said, so-and-so to them.
Was that, as far as you heard, common practice amongst British
soldiers? Well, no, it wasn't. But he was a...
I see, fair enough.
Yes.
Now, the surrender of the German fleet, did you become in... H-31 involved in that?
No, not in H. We went over. I was attached to a destroyer.
Which one?
I can't remember the name, but I remember the name was Captain Hutchinson, Mad Hutchie. And we had to go over to Bremerhaven and then take over the surrender of the German submarines.
That must have been an interesting visit.
Yeah, and the first one that came out was the Deutschland, which was the biggest one she had. So we went aboard the Deutschland. And there were six of us. We all had revolvers. We had to go around and search the boat and everything. Give instructions. Nobody was to drink any water. Nobody was to take any cigarettes, anything like that. And the first thing I had to do as the signalman was to hold down the German ensign, put up the white ensign, and put the German ensign underneath. Well, that started a lot of trouble with the German signalman. Anyway, I got over that, and I told Hutchie, I said, well, look, he won't do it. He said, well, make him do it. So I went back again, and the coxswain of the Deutschland, he could speak perfectly English. And I explained the position to him, and he was quite rational about it. Mm. And he told this German submarine, the signalman, what had to happen.
Did you find it anything of particular interest as a British submariner being aboard a German submarine?
Yeah, the first thing I found really was to find three American officers prisoners of war aboard.
Yes, but I was thinking more about, you know, the comparison between the...
Oh, Russians. Yes, because they could stay at sea for 3 months. We could stay at sea for 3 weeks.
Tell me in a bit of detail how conditions compared.
Well, I mean, the Deutschland was more or less like a liner compared with our submarines. Had bunks to sleep on and beautiful china to eat their meals off, because I brought some china with me anyway off the ship. But they had supply ships to meet her. That's why she stayed at sea, I think. She couldn't stay at sea without being supplied by these supply ships. Mm-hmm.